Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a long clip shot, broken up by Cam. He tries to get it out. What a play, Nurse, to keep it alive. Neal, the Nurse, the shot. He fired it wide. Hawks win. Hawks win. The Chicago Blackhawks have won a series for the first time since the Stanley Cup Championship of 2015. Hawks win. Series over. They're into the final 16.
Pretty cool stuff. Mark Garrody with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, yeah, the Blackhawks with a 3-2 series clinching win in Edmonton last night against the Oilers on NBC Sports Chicago. The Blackhawks will face either Vegas or Colorado in a best-of-seven series next, which is actually considered the first round of the NHL playoffs. The Blackhawks are in the playoffs for the first time since 2016-17. And right now, as I refresh the screen, Vegas and Colorado 2-2 at the end of two. Maybe, I bet you, that we'll be able to tell you who the Blackhawks are playing by the time this show ends at 6 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And joining us now to talk more Blackhawks on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. I completely just botched that. But Al Pamonte Ford, hello. We are joined by Blackhawks defenseman Steve Conroy, the current analyst on NBC Sports Chicago. And Cons, I guess, 142 days off. Did the Blackhawks some good?
I think it did, Groats. They realized they had another kick of the can. And anyone who's ever been given a second chance in life always tries to make the best of it. And they realized maybe how fortunate they were, because had the regular season played out as it should have, they probably weren't going to make the playoffs. But, of course, we all know what happened on March 12th, the end of the season. And they decided that, hey, we're going to have a play-in series. It's going to be 24 teams involved. And as a result, the Blackhawks get in. So, yeah, I think they considered themselves fortunate. And as I mentioned, you know, when you get a do-over, you don't let it slip through your fingers. So they did not let it slip through their fingers. They made the most of it. And, you know, I think they tweaked a couple things, too, during training camp 2.0. But ultimately, you know, they got better goaltending. I think their key players were better, whether it's Jonathan Toews or Corey Crawford between the pipes. And I also think that our depth players really played an important part. And I'm looking at, you know, Matthew Highmore, a guy on the fourth line who ends up with two goals in his last two games. He's a big part of the victory, the series victory against the Edmonton Oilers.
They also got better on special teams as this series progressed. Edmonton 0-for-5 on the power play. That was the whole game as far as I was concerned, because the Blackhawks had some really frustrating penalties, a 5-minute major, that the end of the period penalty, and you hate to see those. What did the Blackhawks do differently last night against the power play that they weren't doing early in the series?
Well, you know, they did score 2 seconds after one of those penalties was over. I think the Matthew Highmore 5-minute major So to me, that's almost like scoring on the power play. But no, I agree, Mark. They were a lot better killing penalties. They just really took away the middle. And that's one thing that the Edmonton Oilers were really good at, was exposing the middle on the power play. And when you get sucked out, you know, as a defenseman in front of the net, you see a guy in the half board, sometimes you want to wander out to him. It's maybe the worst thing you can do. You got to stay back and protect the house. And it's that, you know, 25-foot radius that extends out from the middle of the net. And those are the high danger areas. And I think they did that. They kind of sucked back. And listen, Corey Crawford's a good enough goalie that if a shot's coming from 30, 35, 40 feet out and he sees it, he's going to stop it. You know, it's the second and third opportunities that are 5 feet in front of him that those are the ones that, you know, are going to go in, especially on the power play. So I think they just tightened up a little bit in that regard. They got some good clears, and whenever you throw the puck down the ice, you're killing 20 seconds off the clock. So you do that three times, you know, that's a minute that you're not in your own end. So good clears, a little tighter in their own zone. And of course, the key to all penalty killing is your goaltender, and he is normally your best penalty killer. And that was certainly the case last night. They had some looks. I know you look at the stats and it said 0 for 5, but I think they had some high quality chances with the man advantage, and Corey Crawford stood tall, and he was the man again.
Yeah, he was. And it seems like to me, Steve, that Crawford had the perfect ramp up in this series. Like in the first two games, understandably, he looked a little bit off of his game and then picked it up in the last two. Is that the way you saw it? And can we now expect full Corey Crawford going forward in this postseason?
Yeah, you know, I didn't mind his first game, and I know you look at his stats, and I think his save percentage that day was .860, which is well below, you know, what you want. But they kind of scored two garbage goals. Blackhawks were up 6-2, and Edmonton scores two garbage goals in game one. So, you know, that kind of ruined his debut. Game two, yeah, I'll give you that he maybe wasn't at his best. But I agree with you also, the fact that he was getting reps, and now he's got two games under his belt. You could see that Corey was getting better, especially handling the puck. And as anyone knows, and I talked about it, we did a couple pregame shows down at NBC Sports Chicago. The toughest position to come back after 143 days off is goaltender. And mix in the fact that he suffered from COVID-19 and missed a couple of weeks of training camp, that makes it all the more difficult. So it's tough to get your timing back. He had to do it in a hurry. He did. He literally had, I think he was on the ice six times before, you know, he played in that exhibition game against St. Louis, and he only got half the game. So, you know, I give him a lot of credit. And but I do agree with your observation, Mark, that he got better as it went along. And I think, you know, you're going to notice that too, maybe even heading into the next series. And our guys were playing at a pretty high intensity level. Now, I heard you before I came on. We still don't know whether it's Colorado or Vegas. Those guys are playing, but I don't think it's amped up as much as, you know, a do or die, the play-in series. If you lose, you go home. And with these guys, it's all about seeding. So they're just trying to stay healthy. They're going to see another level against the Hawks, and I hope that first game they can surprise them with some intensity that maybe they're not used to.
Yeah, 2-2 still in that game, Golden Knights and Avalanche. The third period is just underway, and we'll continue to keep you up to date on that. We're talking to the one and only Steve Conroy, the former Blackhawks defenseman, current Blackhawks and hockey analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. How good, Steve, is Dominic Kubalik? Are we talking about a potential superstar or tone it down a notch?
Well, you know, I'll give him the benefit here because he's only 20. I think he just turned 25 recently, or he's going to turn 25 in August. I don't have my notes in front of me, but so he's relatively young. It's his first year in the NHL. He could get better, and then he would be in superstar status, that stratosphere. You know, anyone who could score 30 goals in an NHL shortened season, he only played in, I don't even think he played 70 games. He might have missed a couple of games at some point. He scored 30 goals in less than a full season. That's pretty special. So if he could put in 10 years averaging 30 goals a season, you know, the new NHL, you're going to be a superstar. So sometimes, you know, guys have that magical first year And then the second year, it's kind of a sophomore slump. We'll have to see how he handles that. But I think he's got the potential. He's got all the tools, whether it's, you know, his skating ability, his fearlessness around the net, that great release, that unbelievable one-timer, which we saw last night again. So he's got all the makings of being a really, really good player. You know, can he be a superstar? If he can put up 30 goals a year and he can do it for 8 or 10 years, yeah, I'd put him at that level.
When you say the new NHL, do you mean that they don't score as many points or as many goals as they used to?
Yeah, you know, gosh, back when I played, you know, and it was the Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux era. You know, I think Wayne Gretzky one year had 194 points. So, you know, guys were getting 80 and 90 goals. You know, the last couple of years we've seen guys scoring 50 goals, which is great to see. You know, Alexander Ovechkin has broken the 50-goal mark. I think it was a couple other guys too. But it was a rarity going back 4, 5, 6 years. So, yeah, the new NHL, there's not quite as much scoring as there was back in the 80s. I call them the glory years. But, you know, the NHL has changed. And, you know, the coaching is just so good now. And it's all about defense. And defense wins championships. So, you know, that's what they pay attention to. And goalies are so much better now. You know, we never had goalie coaches back when I played. And now every team carries their own goalie coach. So, you know, a lot more is paid to keeping the puck out of your net than it was back in the 70s and 80s. And so, yeah, it's a little different era. Although, that all being said, boy, we saw a lot of goals between Edmonton and Chicago, and wasn't that fun?
It was, man. It was a blast. And one of the key guys, a legit superstar, Jonathan Toews, and his play in the series. And I thought he made one of the plays of the game last night, in particular on the Dominic Kubalik goal late, where Toews is behind the net, outworking Ethan Bear. He comes up with the puck, makes the pass, and makes that play. I mean, I don't know if he's rejuvenated or if maybe the time off did him some good, but that was just classic Toews, wasn't it?
It really was. And, you know, Jamal Mayers pointed out in the post-game show, you know, how he showed that intensity of lifting the stick and being really strong, because Ethan Bear is a strong kid, strong defenseman, but then he had the soft hands to put it right in the wheelhouse of Dominic Kubalik and score that goal. So, he does look like a rejuvenated Jonathan Toews. And, you know, he had an opportunity to talk to our own Pat Boyle. I think it was in game one. They did a Zoom interview, and he did it in an off day. But he said that, you know, he really decompressed this year. When the NHL was shut down March 12th, NHL players didn't know when they were going to start up again. And it didn't look good back then either. So he just really got away from it all. And he said he actually started watching some hockey because NBC Sports Chicago was replaying all the Stanley Cup years, 2010, 2013, and 2015. And he told Pat that, you know, he got to enjoy it. He relived it, and he really, really enjoyed it. And he'd never really done that before. So I think he's got that taste again. He remembers the feeling and what it was like to climb to the top of the mountain, and he wants to get back there again. And, you know, it certainly looked like that's what he was doing through those four games because you know, I mentioned at the beginning, our best players were better than their best players. They've got maybe the best player in the world in Connor McDavid, and Jonathan Toews absolutely overshadowed him throughout the series. So Patrick Kane was good, maybe not as noticeable as he sometimes is, but he didn't have to be because, you know, everyone else was firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, Jonathan Toews got the better of McDavid, and our goaltender was better than their goaltender, and that was game, set, and match.
One criticism of the Blackhawks was the early goals in three of the four games by Edmonton. Anything to that? Any rhyme or reason, or just really skilled players on Edmonton? Because you know that you're playing with fire when you give up early goals.
No, I think you got to be a little more ready. And that's not a criticism of the coaching staff. Believe it or not, and you're right, you know, three of those goals early by Edmonton, they were also all on first shots. The first shot that Edmonton had and Corey Crawford went in. Oof. And I'm not hanging it on Corey because they were all prime scoring chances. So, you know, I think, listen, typically when you're down 1-0 in a playoff game, the team who scores first I don't know what the stats are, but I'd say 75% of the time goes on to win the game. It's just that big a momentum swing. When you get that first goal, you know, all of a sudden the other team's thinking, well, now we got to get two to win. So it's kind of a psychological barrier maybe, and you feel like you're chasing the game. Fortunately for the Blackhawks, you know, they were able to tie it up relatively quickly in all three of those contests. So you don't want to be doing that against the Colorado team who, you know, I kind of hope we don't play. I'd rather see Vegas. But if it's Colorado, boy, they've got so much firepower up front. You can't afford to get behind when you've got guys like Rantanen and MacKinnon and Landeskog. And I mean, the list goes on and on. It's not just one or two lines. They've got three lines that are capable of scoring.
Well, I got some good news for you, Steve. The Golden Knights have just taken a lead on the Avalanche. Yeah, it is Vegas 3, Colorado 2, with 16:19 to go in the game. What, if it is Vegas, what are they looking at with that team?
Well, I mean, they're a good team too, and I don't mean to disparage the Vegas Golden Knights, but I think the biggest story there is, you know, you've got Robin Lehner, who I know who's playing this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So former Blackhawk Robin Lehner, who was very good here, was traded at the trade deadline, and I know Marc-Andre Fleury is a pretty good goalie for them, but he has not looked good since the play-in. Well, the round robin for them has started anyway. And I know Leonard's played at least two of the four games, so could see Robin Lehner. I really like Mark Stone, and this is all you have to know about Mark Stone, Mark, that a couple of years ago, Patrick Kane said the most underrated player in the NHL is Mark Stone. And that's when Stone was in with the Ottawa Senators. So, you know, we never got to see Ottawa a lot. Obviously, with Vegas being in the Western Conference, we get to see them a little more. And I couldn't agree more. He's an underrated player. Maybe people don't know him, but if we do play Vegas, watch out for Mark Stone. And the other kid I like, he's got some size, Alex Tuck, who plays on the third line. We got to see him quite a bit because he was in Minnesota for a few years, and he just always caught my eye. So they're a well-coached team. They're pretty big. I think our D is better than their D. You know, they've got some names back there, but you know, McNabb's, you know, he's lost his stride, and Nate Schmidt is probably their best D-man. Theodore's okay, but, you know, you look at their third pairing in Holden and Whitecloud, names you might not know. I thought our third pair of Mata and Slater Cuckoo were unbelievable. I mean, between the two of them, they scored, I believe, three goals, maybe had four assists. And, you know, you look at the Edmonton Oilers defense, they didn't have any goals at all. So our third pairing at three, Edmonton Oilers' entire D had none. And that was a big factor in the game. So, yeah, Vegas, you know, you still can't underestimate them. But, you know, I'd rather play them than the Colorado Avalanche.
Robin Lehner, by the way, Cons, 26 saves in that game right now. Golden Knights leading at 3-2 with now 13:58 to go in the game. Yeah, that would be interesting if they go up against Robin Lehner. Is that advantage goalie or advantage skill players in a scenario like that? Or is it just kind of a wash because everybody knows each other?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a wash. You know, I said it in the, you know, we did a kind of a preview show to the series against Edmonton. I said, whoever wins the front of the net is going to win this series. And I think that's where most series in the playoffs are won, is the front of the net. And you think about all the tips. I don't know if you got to see all the games, Mark, but boy, we scored five or six or seven, you know, great tip-in goals where the shot comes from the point, it gets through, and somebody gets a stick on it. Matthew Highmore, both of his goals were like that. Kubalik scored a tip-in goal. Jonathan Toews had one going off his shin pad. I mean, the list goes on and on. We saw a number of guys get sticks on pucks, and that's winning the front of the net. That's establishing position and not getting pushed out of there and having good eye-hand coordination. So, yeah, you know what? Robin Lehner is going to know some of our shooters, and that's okay because, you know, the name of this game is to screen the goalie because most goalies are good enough if they see it, they're going to stop it. So get in front of them and try and get a stick on it. And aside from that, you know, look at second and third opportunities. That means rebound chances. So even though he might know where some of these shooters are going, it's those second and third opportunities where I think he's going to be guessing.
But this has been a great breakdown, Steve. And I actually loved the conversation we had the last time I talked to you as well. But I'm glad we're not necessarily talking about the TV shows we binged watched because there's nothing to talk about as far as hockey, you know?
Well, you know what? Hey, I'm glad you brought that up. I almost forgot. So I'm looking for Chicago. Was that on Netflix or is that on something else? Was it on Amazon Prime? Because I couldn't find it.
Find what?
Didn't you recommend... Did you recommend a Netflix show on the group Chicago, or am I confused?
Oh, yeah, yes. When you said that, I thought you were talking about one of the Chicago police or fire shows. Yes, the documentary, the rockumentary on Chicago, and you didn't find it on Netflix?
I couldn't find it on Netflix, yeah, so I typed it. You know, I've got the Xfinity remote where I talk into it, so I said Netflix Chicago, you know, I didn't use rockumentary, but I even went to it and just typed it into the search box and couldn't find it. So it's on Netflix.
Huh.
Is it on Netflix?
I thought it was. Maybe I need to. Okay. Wait a minute. It's on Showtime, but I think it must have been on Netflix at one point in time, and maybe its time ended on Netflix because that does happen. So I don't know if you have Showtime, but
No. But does Hulu carry Showtime stuff?
I'm not sure. I don't have the Hulu, but it's funny. I'm glad you took that because I wish you'd seen it because like I said, Chicago's not even a band that I really like, but I loved the documentary. So
no, did you get to watch 20 Feet from Stardom?
I have not, but it is still on my list right now.
You got to see it. Just even if you just give it a half an hour, it's well worth.
Okay.
20 Feet from Stardom.
Now, is that on Netflix? That is on.
That
Netflix.
That is definitely on Netflix. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I recommend it. Are you watching anything else right now?
No, I've kind of been. It's funny. I was talking about this that it was kind of sad for one reason when sports returned. I was like, well, that's it for Netflix for a while. It's like, and I started watching a really weird movie last night called Under the Skin. Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson. It's bizarre. It's about an alien woman who seduces men into her van and feeds them to another planet. And I don't know. I watched like about a half an hour of it last night, and I think I might be done with it. It's just so bizarre.
Okay.
What about you? You watching anything?
I'll get that one. We basically watched everything, you know, all the Ozarks and everything else unorthodox, but, we just started not too long ago. It's an Australian show called Stateless, and it's about a gal who ends up in a refugee camp in Australia. It's pretty well acted. We're only two or three episodes into it, but that's what we're watching right now. Stateless.
Yes, Netflix keeps telling me to watch that, so I'm gonna have to check that out. But 20 Feet from Stardom. By the next time you and I speak, I will not dare call you again until I've watched some of 20 Feet from Stardom.
Good, because it'll be a test.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Mark. Anytime.
All right, buddy. That is Steve Conroyd, former Blackhawks defenseman and current hockey analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. A great breakdown of the game as we await. Now I really want it to be the Vegas Golden Knights because, well, Con said you don't want it to be Colorado and the Robin Leonard factor. It's just a more intriguing series at this point from a Blackhawks perspective. And it's still 3-2 midway through the third period of play going on in Edmonton right now. We do need to take a break. Still to come on the show, we'll talk to Bruce Levine at 5 o'clock to talk about the White Sox as their game is finishing up and some anger over Ricky Renteria's use of the bullpen today. Plus at 5:20, we'll see what's going on with the Cubs or not going on with the Cubs with Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off.
Hey, why you got to do my guy Mitchell Trubisky like that? Come on now. Mark Grody back with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Going to talk Cubs with Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune at 5:20. We'll see what is next for the Cubs, whose series with St. Louis, with the Cardinals in St. Louis, called off, postponed because of the coronavirus Cardinals. The White Sox have just lost to the Cleveland Indians, 7-1 the final score. Yoan Moncada with a monster shot of a home run for the only highlight of the day for the White Sox, his third of the season. So the White Sox now 8-7 overall. We'll talk to Bruce Levine about the White Sox in a half an hour, 5 o'clock. There was some anger, apparently, about Ricky Renteria's usage of pitchers today. It was a bullpen day, but even in that, Ricky Renteria taking criticism like he tends to do on White Sox Twitter. By the way, great pitching matchup schedule tomorrow for the White Sox and Indians. Shane Bieber against Lucas Giolito. And because the Cubs and Cardinals were canned, called off, they have decided to put the White Sox and Indians on Sunday Night Baseball. So that's pretty cool for the White Sox. Updating hockey for you, watching it closely. Vegas leading Colorado 3-2. The winner of that game plays the Blackhawks in the first round of the playoffs, a best-of-seven series after the Blackhawks knocked out the Edmonton Oilers last night, and they did it in four games, just dominated the Oilers for most of that particular series. The Bears, there was a lot of zooming this week for the Bears. They are in what they refer to as phase two of their training camp ramp-up. Things moving a bit faster. I don't really know what phase two means. They're moving faster, I guess. Still no pads or hitting or 7-on-7 or anything like that. Probably none of that until about a week and a half from now, and I'll believe it when I hear about it. I was going to say I'll believe it when I see it, but I don't know if we're going to be allowed to see anything. We'll see. We'll see if there is a true training camp. They keep saying that there's going to be. I don't know. Just got a hard time believing it. I do think that they will play football this year. I just don't feel like it's going to be anything close to typical at any point in time during this training camp. But, again, plenty of Zoom calls with the players and the coaches. And because we don't get to see anything, as I just said, and because the coaches don't get to do a lot with their players right now, it becomes very difficult to figure out what is substantive up to this point. And there are only a few real things that I've been able to decipher, and I'll go through them right now. And one of the real moments to me was defensive coordinator Chuck Pagano, and it is centered on Eddie Jackson. Jackson, as you know, 2018 was a superstar, a Pro Bowl season. Not just that, but he was an All-Pro, which is the higher distinction for sure. He was one of the best in the NFL, period. I mean, you see all these lists now, and Jackson is not on them. He was top five 2018. 2019, last year, he was good, a Pro Bowl year, and worthy of it, but he just wasn't spectacular. There wasn't the playmaking, the ball hawking, the pick sixes, etc. One of the potential reasons for this was where Pagano positioned Jackson last year, is he had him up in the box often, more like a strong safety to help support. And because Clinton Dix, who was with the Bears last year, now with Dallas, was more free safety than strong safety, just like Eddie Jackson. So you had two guys, in essence, who thrived at the same position. And there was just a fine line between the two positions set forth by Chuck Pagano last year. So, in other words, Jackson was really not allowed to be as creative and free and playing so-called center field last year for the Bears, not as ball-hawking as he could be last year. So the thought was, in this offseason, maybe things change a little bit with the scheme and you get Eddie Jackson more in that traditional role of free safety. But it doesn't sound like it. Here's Chuck Pagano.
You just don't want to be, okay, we got a free and we got a strong. You know, because we just don't want to line up and, you know, Tom Brady comes to town on a Thursday night, you know, and just tell them, you know, because if they turn on the tape and every time we're in single high defense, it's always 39, it's always 39. So no matter what we're doing, if he always ends up there, that's not good for our disguise. So he's really good in the deep parts. He's good down low. He's good blitzer, you know, so we're going to play to his strengths. And we're going to play to all their strengths. You know, and I got to do a better job, you know, as a play caller of putting all the guys, all 11 guys in the right spots to make plays. And then as far as, you know, the competition there, the traits part, I mean, you know, ball skills, anticipation, range, they got to be able to tackle, blitz. We're going to ask them to do a lot of things. So all those things we're looking for, they both can do that. It's going to be a great competition, you know, and the great thing was, coach, you know, Ryan, Coach Nagy, myself, Sean, when we talked to Sean about coming, you know, we laid it all out there, and we talked to Dion and said, okay, here's how it's going to roll. And they're going to get equal number snaps with the ones, you know, and they're going to have to come in here and compete, you know, day after day after day. It's going to be a little bit different, obviously, with no preseason. But we're going to create the competition and create the situations to where we can do a honest eval on those guys and give them both an opportunity, you know, to win that job.
I like that. I like that last part. I'll get to that in a second, the Deion Bush to Sean Gibson competition. But I like what Chuck Pagano was saying. Like, it made more sense to me now that I'm listening to it again, that it's about matchups. It's about disguise. It's about, as he used the example of Tom Brady coming in, you don't want to just give it away. You don't want to make it simple. Like, here's our free safety. Here's our strong safety. Here's where he'll be. Here's where he's going to be. You do what you have to do based on the opponent that you're playing, even if it is frustrating that you don't have Eddie Jackson seemingly as free, but he might be as effective. What it reminds me of, while I was listening to that, it reminds me of Brian Urlacher back in the day when he was in his first couple of years. It was a different alignment. The Bears were in a 3-4 then, and they had it was Dick Geron, and they had the Biggins in there. They had Ted Washington. They had Keith Traylor. So you had all those guys mopping up for Urlacher, and Urlacher was just – he was just there. He was free because those guys, the Biggins, were doing all the work. When Lovie Smith comes in and he's doing the Tampa Bay D, it turned into a different scenario where Urlacher moved back a bit and was in the middle, asked to cover more, and it was a different position. I don't think Urlacher liked it at first, but he still was a Hall of Famer. He probably had more fun when he had Ted Washington and Keith Traylor, but they did put him in the right position. Like, give Lovie Smith credit. Really, I mean, I like what Dick Geron did with him too, to be honest with you. I like both forms of it, but it was just two guys with two different philosophies, two defensive minds. And so to me, it's a different scenario, obviously, but similar, that you have this highly skilled player who everybody would like to see roam free and Eddie Jackson, but maybe to help the team win, you want that guy being more versatile and being closer to the box at times. And J.J. Stankiewicz was on with me. He of NBC Sports Chicago. He was on with me a while back, and he made a good point that Eddie Jackson last year may have actually become a better safety because he was asked to do more, because he was asked to tighten up tackling skills and do things that he hadn't done the previous year. So he became a more complete safety. And I thought that was a great point and maybe sort of a silver lining out of that. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But when I listen to it now, it does make more sense because it was frustrating at times to see both HaHa Clinton Dix and Eddie Jackson playing the same position, or so it seemed. As for Deion Bush and Tashawn Gibson, I'm really glad that – I hope he's serious. I hope that Pagano is serious when he says that this is going to be an open competition and, you know, may the best man win. I don't know if that's actually the case because he brought in Gibson, and maybe that's who Ryan Pace would like. But I think that the best – honestly, the positionally, the best pairing back there would be Eddie Jackson and Deion Bush, because Bush is more willing to do the dirty work and the strong safety stuff and the tackling and the physical parts. Whereas Tashawn Gibson is more of a Eddie Jackson type of guy, a free safety type. The best combination that Eddie Jackson has ever had was with Adrian Amos, because Adrian Amos was very happy to be a strong safety, and he was damn good at it and earned a lot of money to go play it with the Green Bay Packers. That was the best combination Eddie Jackson ever had. You couldn't keep Adrian Amos, I get it, because you're pouring the money into Jackson and he subsequently got his extension, but that, I hope that that's real. I hope that that's a real competition between the two and that Deion Bush gets a serious chance. If they evaluate and they think Gibson is the better guy, then go for it. But I do hope Bush gets a serious look-see. Another thing that has stood out, there is over-the-top love for Roquan Smith going into this camp. And I love Roquan Smith, too. Everybody loves Roquan Smith. Everybody is anticipating this sort of redemption season for Roquan Smith after some personal issues and the pectoral injury last year that just didn't derail his season by any means. He still had a pretty good season. But listen to all the love right now for Roquan Smith, and then I'll tell you why I think it's happening.
Like, I know, I think Ro made the, I want to say he said chip on his shoulder. And I feel that. I think he has that. Because, you know, the thing is, Ro played some really good football last year. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle. He had some excellent games. And I think that the big thing this year is just going to be we got to make that consistent, and we got to have that be every game. I think we all know that. Going into his third year, this is a big year for him. He knows that. And I think it doesn't – I think it takes at the linebacker position, I do feel like there's a gradual level where he's getting better, and I think going into year three, he's going to have a chance to have a breakout year this year. But he has been outstanding this offseason. I think he's been phenomenal physically with his rehab and mentally with me. I'm very proud of him, and I'm really excited about the direction.
Roquan, he's a really good player, very instinctive, had a really good first year, good second year. I really feel like the sky's the limit for him. Roquan, to me, he's a funny guy. He's a Southern country boy, loves to play football. So I do think this will be a big year for Roquan, and I know he's ready to play.
He was awesome in the offseason. Zoom stuff, engaged, locked in like the rest of his teammates. Coming back, he did a phenomenal job. He was, you know, coming off the injury, he was one of the guys that could actually come in here into the facility and do rehab. So he was kind of, ahead of the game that way, because he was in here working with, you know, Jason Loscalzo. He's getting treatment from Andre and the guys. And so he's in phenomenal shape. He's locked in. He's engaged. Going through the meetings to this point, the installs, we've had a couple walkthroughs with those guys. He's on top of it. He hasn't skipped a beat. And then I just think that we've seen Pro Bowl caliber play. You know, now it's just got to be consistent, you know, do it week in and week out and stay consistent. And I think coming into year three, he's going to have a phenomenal year.
Those voices that you heard, Mark DeLeon, the inside linebackers coach for the Bears, sounds surprisingly like Jeff Dickerson. Buster Skrine, the Bears nickel back, and then the defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano. And I think this is kind of the coaching staff's way of saying that you have to have a great year. It's a must-play well season for Roquan Smith. Pressure with praise, as I like to say. He's the 8th overall pick, a Butkus Award winner. And it's not like he had a bad year last year at all. Frankly, they just need him to be great. That's where the bar is set for him. And I think Roquan wants the bar to be set at great. That's where it's set for him. And Roquan last season, 101 combined tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks in his rookie year, his first year, obviously, 2 years ago, 121 combined, 8 tackles for loss, and 5 sacks. Definitely more impactful in 2018, the old eye test. You know he was better in 2018, but by the numbers, no, he didn't have a bad year. You could even say he had a good year last year. But they want him to be, and they need him to be, and I think they're kind of telling him to be, we need you to go ahead and be great. It's that simple. When we return, we're going to talk more Bears, and we'll get into the quarterbacks on the Chicago Bears. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're talking to Bruce Levine in about 10 minutes about the White Sox loss. Then we're doing Cubs with Mark Gonzalez at 520 of the Chicago Tribune. We're talking Bears right now and the offense and the quarterbacks. We are still getting to know the brand new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. We know all about Nick Foles. I want to know what you think of Mitch Trubisky, though. Here is Lazor on Trubisky.
I think he's shown his great recall, which I think is a critical part for the quarterback. I mean, when we're talking about installing a play, he can talk about, you know, when it was put in, why it was put in, what the situations were, even what happened. And I just think, you know, one of the keys, like when a quarterback hears a play in a huddle, there's got to be recall. And the recall has got to be not only what is this play that's called, right, to put it simply, but the reason why the best quarterbacks in the league are typically, you know, the older quarterbacks. The reason why the older quarterbacks, if they can do it physically, just get better and better and better is because their recall is also a library of all the experiences they've had playing that play. right? Where you get to the point where it's hard to fool them anymore because they've seen all the defenses. Well, Mitch has shown me that he has that ability to recall. So I'd say that would be one thing that stands out. On the field, again, he hasn't been in a situation where the quarterbacks can go full speed yet. But in our walkthrough situations, if we ask him to do something that's different, he's able to do it. If something comes up and we say, you know what, we don't want to do that situation this year. Maybe it's a brand new cadence. You know, it sounds like a simple thing, but he can take it and change it and make the correction and go with it. And so just like with any learner, you want a guy that you can get through to, or a guy that can take it from the classroom and then walk out onto the walkthrough grass and put it right into action. And he's shown that so far. And, you know, next level will be when it gets to be full speed, and that'll be eventually.
That is Bears offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. I know, not a lot there. I probably should not have made that cut that long because there's not a lot of there. It's good that he's got good recall and all that, but the key part there was we don't know until he's full speed. And they are getting to know Mitchell Trubisky. John DeFilippo saying that they're seeing him live for the first time. That said, Lazor talking about Nick Foles having gone through a quarterback competition already in Philadelphia when they were both there. Here's Lazor on that.
The plays, I remember the on the field, I remember the preseason games when we were having the competition very, very specifically. I how he handled it, I mean, I probably couldn't answer about any specifics. I probably shouldn't even if I remembered, but I guess my wife says I remember the football part real well. And so I can remember the plays. I just remember that he never stopped developing. He was a young player at the time. He continued to work and work and work. And so when the decision was made that Michael Vick would start, there was no blinking from Nick. He just kept going. And then in the fifth game of the year, he got in the fourth game of the year, I believe, at Denver. Through a touchdown pass, but then when Michael got hurt in the fifth game and Nick went in, I mean, he just took off and he just kept getting better and better and better. So I guess that would be the biggest thing as a coach, that it didn't affect his desire to continue to improve. And as I, you know, it's kind of neat. I see him now. He's experienced so much, right? And come so far, and just to see him just in a different light, you know, is really neat. And then, so he's just come, obviously I've seen him experience a lot from the outside, but to be able to sit in the back of the room and listen to him talk and it does bring back some memories. Sometimes he reminded me of something I had said back in 2013 yesterday. And it was really a cool experience for me. He probably doesn't even know it. Just, he brought up a coaching point he said, you know, when you were talking today, it reminded me of such and such coaching point that you gave back in 2013. And he told me how it had affected him. And like as a teacher, right, as a coach, what greater compliment can you get than to someone, you know, one of the guys who played for you to tell you that something you said that many years ago, he still remembers it today.
This is what I can't get past. And that's Bill Lazor talking about Nick Foles. And that is the familiarity that Foles has with Bill Lazor, John DeFilippo, and Matt Nagy. How does Mitchell Trubisky compete with that? Why wouldn't those coaches put their vote in, for whatever it's worth, for Nick Foles? So it's like Foles has the coaches and Trubisky has the players, and we'll see how it all plays out in the end. But as I continue to listen to these Zoom press conferences, that is what pops in my mind. I still think Trubisky has a slight edge, but man, the relationship that Foles has with those guys, the guys that will ultimately make the decision, that cannot be overlooked as Nick Foles and the points that will go on his side. So very interesting. That's where we are with the Chicago Bears. White Sox Twitter was angry. We're going to find out why. The White Sox did lose to the Indians 7-1, but there's more to it. We'll check in with our Bruce Levine, who was out at Guaranteed Rate Field for the White Sox 6-run loss to the Indians. Bruce is next. I'm Mark Rohde. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.